From meet your beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Dr. Clint Van Zandt is here. Of course, you know Clint as a retired FBI agent, author, president of Van Zandt & Associates. And for your information, when you see his blog on MSNBC.com under TV and commentary, it can be found at a new place now called newsvine.com, www.newsvine.com, and of course msnbc.com. Clint covers it if it's a high-profile case, and he's a hard guy to get on the show, so it's always nice to have him here. Hi, Clint. How are you?
Hey, Dana. Good to be back with you.
Nice to have you here. We're going to spend probably the next 25 to 30 minutes on a couple of different topics, but one that is very prevalent in the news right now, if you follow politics and this whole bailout mess, is the whole bailout mess, and the FBI is involved in this. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about this now, of course, you know, most Americans are sitting here realizing that, myself as a taxpayer, I want to grab Congress by the nap of the back of the head and shake them and say, hey, wait a minute, ladies and gentlemen, you didn't just wake up last night and find that somebody had borrowed our national credit card and charged $700 billion to it. You know, I mean, this is not identity fraud to the nth degree. This is something that's going on. It's been going on for a number of years now. It went on during the Clinton administration. It went on during the Bush administration. And what frustrates me, Dana, as an investigator, and you and I have to deal with facts. We don't deal with suppositions or other thing else. I see here in the States, you know, Democrats and Republicans, conservatives and liberals arguing back and forth who is responsible. But the job of the FBI, of course, is to find out from a criminal standpoint who is responsible. It's one thing if just through omission or mass stupidity between Congress and our own financial institutions, we got ourselves in this monstrous quagmire. It's an entire another thing if there is criminal intent. Let me give you just one little example.
Sure.
Somebody I know in a town I live in buys homes. He doesn't make a whole lot of money, but he buys homes, he renovates the houses, and then he rents them out. I sat down and talked to him recently just before I was on CNBC talking about the FBI arresting a number of different individuals involved in making mortgages. And I said, for example, to this young man, I said, you know, you've bought 7 houses. I said, when you talk to someone involved in the mortgages, what do they do? And he said, you know, every one of them, he said, I filled out my financial information and I gave it to them. And he said, they slid it back to me again and said, you know, there must be some income you missed. If there was only, you know, more dollars here and more dollars there. Now, why don't you take this back and reevaluate it and then come back, and when the numbers are right, we can make this happen. Dana, this is just on a low level, somebody saying, please commit fraud so I can make this. Well, we've got people working in America making $25,000 a year at best, flipping burgers at McDonald's, and there is nothing the matter with that. I'm glad people are working. But they're in the mortgage industry. They were allowing these people to make a mortgage for $250,000, $400,000. Dana, the numbers weren't there, and now it's the FBI's challenge. Notwithstanding, Congress is trying to figure out this massive bailout that may leave every man, woman, and child in the United States owing thousands of dollars. But now it's the FBI's job to go back again and say, if this just wasn't mass stupidity, if this, in fact, was criminal greed, how do we sort through this? And Dana, were you and I involved in this? You know, this is going to take tens of hundreds, maybe thousands of interviews that are going to have to take place. Hundreds of thousands of records are going to be reviewed. It's going to take hundreds of investigators from the FBI and the Internal Revenue Service to sort through this, probably a few years. And I'm just afraid while all this is going on, there are going to be people who are naturally going to slip away. They're going to slither away. They're going to crawl under some rock again after they've made tens of thousands of dollars just in unscrupulous ways. So who's to blame? I tell you, if somebody offers me a mortgage for far more than I know I can afford and I take it, that's my fault. It's the agency that made that mortgage's fault. It's the financial institution that bought that mortgage. It's, you know, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. But now, I mean, as much as the FBI has a responsibility, and I believe it's true, to fight terrorism, this is the time my former agency has to rise to the occasion in the 21st century. We have to say, if there is criminal intent and criminal activity, that has to be ferreted out. And everybody who thinks they're going to get a golden parachute and just slide away from this, we need to shoot holes in their parachutes. And Dana, there needs to be dozens, maybe hundreds of people that go to jail for this. And I'm just afraid that we're not going to get them, and that a lot of these guys are going to slip away, and that this entire country, and probably the world, is going to wind up paying the bill for a combination of greed and stupidity.
Well, I think you say it best. The if you look at the desire of need has been taken over by the criminal fraudulent greed, and whether it's a loans officer or a mortgage lender or even a house salesman that thinks that they're going to pocket a commission and keep pocketing commissions, even in the community that I live in, I'm starting to see $400,000-$600,000 homes which never ever existed before, and the economy, Clint, terrorism is one thing, but the economy and what's happening to it, is that not a form of domestic terrorism?
Well, it is, and the interesting thing, and I think you've hit upon it, Dana, is that the things that Osama bin Laden and his like couldn't do to this country, which is to totally destroy our economy, we've done it. It looks like we're on the way to doing it internally.
To ourselves, yeah.
We've put the gun in our own hand. We've shot ourselves in the foot. We are bleeding and limping all over the place. And now we have Congress in the United States looking to point the finger. I mean, you know, when are men and women going to grow up in a political system and quit blaming Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives? When do we take on a World War II type of attitude or something to say, you know what, this is so great, let's put all of this aside and let's deal with this tremendous financial calamity that's facing this country? And Dana, that drives me back to a premise that I've held for years, that at least in the United States, we should not have professional politicians. Every congressman, every senator, every representative, he or she should be able to serve two terms. It's like when this country started and we asked people, please come from your farm, your store, whatever it is, come serve as an elected representative for one or two terms, but keep your day job because you're going to go back to it again. Dana, in the United States, for a congressman, for example, has to every day make $5,000 in contributions to keep his or her job. They have to be out there shaking that plate. Well, whose interest do they have at heart? The public, or are they trying to get that $5,000 a day to keep that job? You know, I fear for the country that my grandchildren are going to inherit.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And to see these, we call them professional politicians, clamoring for camera time, doing the double take to the camera, because they're pros. They're knowing that this media thing, there's the guys with the white hats and there's the guys with the black hats, including those that are running for president in the United States, that are just watching this something fierce. And I think we'll end on this topic, Clint, by saying, and I agree with you totally, that there needs to be some big-time indictments in this, and a lot of people go to jail. I couldn't agree with you more.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Speaking of nightmares.
Speaking of nightmares, we've got enough of them down here.
You remember the Dallas episode where Patrick Duffy quit the series, and then at the end he decided to come back, and it was the Dream episode?
Yep, in a dream episode, so we had to reinvent them all over again.
Yep, and I'm wondering if the Anthony case isn't like one of those dream episodes. We're going to find out. We're all going to wake up here in, I don't know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and I'm not making jest of this because it's just got so crazy. We've got bounty hunters. We've got high-priced media people. We've got book deals, movie deals, you name it. And we have a little girl that I believe has all the answers to this, whether she's dead or alive.
Yeah, well, you know, in the case of missing Kaylee Anthony, you know, I mean, you look at the mother, you look at the grandmother, you know, you realize this old phrase, you know, that the what is it, the nut doesn't fall too far from the tree. Maybe that's something Freud said by using the term nut. But in this particular case, you know, you can see why the biological mother may be a little bit challenged because the grandmother herself is. You know, this whole family is challenged. But, Dana, I mean, I think you and I, as investigators, I mean, for me, I can reduce this down very quickly. I mean, my wife and I were talking about the case. She says, "What's your opinion?" I said, "You know what? This is pretty cut and dry for me." I said, "You've got a young woman in her early 20s. Who didn't want to be a mother to begin with, and her mother talked her into having this child. I said, she had it. The child gets in her way. She likes drugs. She likes sex. She likes rock and roll."
Yep.
And when you take a little child like this who gets in her way, you know, one quote is Casey said, quote, "Seriously, spending the day with Kaylee is 10 times more exhausting than working a 12-hour event," and she refers to her as the little snot nose.
Yeah.
Well, when you've got someone talking about that, this is a woman who didn't want to be a mother. Her mother told her you had to go ahead and have a child. The child got in her way, and to me, again, the equation is pretty easy. Somehow, through talking to her friends who are into just what she's into, drugs, sex, and rock and roll, but maybe didn't have the responsibility of a child, Casey got on the internet, talked to some friends, said, "Hey, a lot of the ways that young people go out when they have a child is they chloroform the child. Then you're guaranteed she's going to be out 8 to 10 hours.
Yep.
You put her to bed. Nobody has to watch her. You do your thing, and you come home, if you're able to come home the next morning, and your kid's still asleep." I think she was chloroforming her child so she could go out and do her thing. I think she came back home one morning. The child was dead. I think she's a sociopath, a psychopath, an antisocial personality that you and I know 2 to 4% of the population of any country normally is. I think she said, "Well, she was a pain in the ass anyway, and she died. It's not my fault." I think she probably maybe buried the child in her backyard for a little bit, dug her up again, drove around with her in the trunk of the car trying to figure out what to do, disposed of the body. And everything that has been said, everything that has come out of that woman's mouth since has been a pathological lie. And as you and I know, a pathological liar, they don't get caught in a lie. They just tell another lie to make up for the last one. So all this woman has done is told lie after lie after lie. So what are the chances this little girl is dead? I'd say 99.5%. I mean, I never want to take away the possibility that, you know, it was like when you and I used to talk about the Natalie Holloway case.
Right.
I was on Dr. Phil one night, or one afternoon, and Dr. Phil's premise was going to be that Natalie Holloway was kidnapped by some third world potentate, and she was being held as a sex slave in some Caribbean country.
Good grief.
And I sat with Beth Holloway, Natalie's mother, and I said, "Beth, Dr. Phil's going to advance a theory." I said, "It is BS. Do not believe it. This is not what happened to your daughter." And Beth says, "Well," she says, "Clint, you know, I got to believe in something." And I said, "Beth, you got to believe in something that has some semblance of truth. This doesn't have any semblance in truth." And it's the same thing with Kaylee Anthony. There's no semblance in truth of anything she said. And Dana, if you lie about the little things, you lie about the big things. So there's no doubt in my mind, if I were an investigator working this case, I'm dealing with a child who's dead. I'm dealing with a mother who probably is responsible accidentally, even though she probably chloroformed the child. She didn't want to kill her necessarily. But from that point on, everything has been a lie. And now the challenge for investigators is, can you put together enough of a circumstantial case so a jury can say, even without, at this point, a body, we can still say she had the means, motive, and opportunity to kill her child to the exclusion of anybody else in the world. Everything she said is a lie. Therefore, she is a logical person to have killed her child. The question is, can you put that as a legal case together? Can you prosecute and can you get a conviction at this point? Or, as investigators apparently are doing right now, do you keep looking, thinking maybe you'll come up either with a body or enough physical evidence, in this case, evidence of a decomposing body in the trunk, hair consistent with the little girl's hair, evidence of chloroform in the car, and lies as that could string from coast to coast in the United States. Will that be enough to indict, and will that be enough for a jury to convict?
Yeah, I agree. And with this case, and if you're just tuning in, Clint Van Zandt's here, and we're talking Casey and Kaylee Anthony. It's when you look at the facts and you look at the evidence that's been released, and I'm going to ask you a little bit here about the actually over 1,000 pages of evidence that's been released now, and it does point towards what some call a babysitter in a bottle case, and then a cover up. When we heard Grandma on the phone the first time phoning 911 saying the car smells like there's been a dead body in the damn car, I believe that that's what Grandma said and what she smelt. And then as time went on and they found out what really happened, they started to cover up a little bit and got scared and all this sort of thing. But now you see 1,000 pages of evidence out there, Clint. You see all of this stuff with the bounty hunters and all these sorts of things coming out, and really, what's this doing to solve this case? It's not going very far unless we're not being told.
Well, I think there's still a lot of work being done. Look, I mean, I fault Cindy Anthony, the grandmother. I mean, I think that, that's her gene, pool that her daughter is functioning from, that Casey Anthony is functioning from. But, the reality is when I've got three children who are grown adults and they have their own children now. But, Dana, when they were young, I would tell them, I said, if you ever get stopped by a police officer and they advise you of your rights, I said, don't be stupid. I said, understand, those are your rights. And I said, shut up.
Yep.
And I said, but don't lie. I said, just be quiet. I said, and you have a right to defend yourself, just like every person I ever arrested has a right for a good defense. But when you start telling lie upon lie upon lie, when you build this house of cards that is just falling over any time the wind blows, I think the challenge for investigators, you and I would always conduct a two-track investigation. Mm-hmm. Track number one would say, okay, let's take Casey Anthony at her word. Let's believe that she gave this daughter either to a babysitter who absconded, or, as Cindy, the grandmother, has suggested, her friends who do drugs kidnapped the child, maybe took her, to some South American or to the someplace outside of the United States. They're either holding the child or they've sold her or something like that. Okay, we have to take that and we have to assign investigative resources to that. But let's also investigate the logical that this mother, that Casey was the last person known to be with the child. She was the last time the child was ever seen alive. She was with her mother. So let's conduct that investigation, too. So the police conduct this two-prong investigation, partly wasting valuable resources, mm-hmm. chasing down lie after lie after lie that not only Casey, but Cindy has told, too. Again, Cindy, just like the case I made for myself, I mean, Cindy has got a right to be supportive of her daughter. She's got a right to try to believe her daughter. But look, when everything that comes out of her daughter's mouth has been a lie, you'd like to think that the light bulb's going to go on in Cindy's head.
Yep.
And that she, at some point, would start to cooperate with law enforcement. But, she has to make a decision, like every other person in her case would, Dana. Is she going to face the reality that her daughter probably had something to do with the demise of her granddaughter and help investigators? Or is she going to continue to support? Is she going to say to herself, my granddaughter's gone. There's nothing I can do to get her back, but at least I can try to save my daughter. Where are your loyalties as a parent versus your responsibility as a citizen? And that's a tough call for anyone to make.
You do a lot of media, obviously. You cover all the high-profile cases on NBC and Dateline, all these shows. Been on my show for years now. Have you seen a cast of characters like this before?
Well, you know, the media really gets their teeth in these cases. I mean, you know, Nancy Grace runs this case every night.
Yep.
I mean, ad nauseum, you know. It's like, in the case, there's been nothing new. But realize, in Natalie Holloway, we had nothing new for 6-9 months.
I know.
And
yep.
Greta ran with it every night.
Yep.
And Nancy Grace ran with it every night. And
yep.
Dan Abrams and I on MSNBC ran with it every night. America gets these soap opera cases. And then we start to live, unfortunately, vicariously through this. Again, it's a soap opera, and we know we're concerned. I mean, I'm concerned it's a missing child. Hey,
yep.
There, you know, it's that's one of the reasons, you know, we give away our DVD, Protecting Children from Predators, on our website, is that I, like you, were concerned with children. But it's one thing if we're looking for a kidnapped child. It's another thing if we're looking for a child who we believe is deceased. And as you indicate, this cast of characters, between Casey and her mother, Cindy, between her father, the former law enforcement officer, as you know, she had a boyfriend that was a deputy sheriff that she was sleeping with that didn't report that he had an involvement with her. We have a biological father who, depends who you talk to, is either dead or alive. We've got other boyfriends. We've got drugs. We've got friends. We've got the things that cable television in the United States love, because there's
exactly.
there's this terrible nature to the story that every night there's some new spin on it that allows you. You know, it's like these stories, Dana, it's like people, they want to go to the zoo, and they want to get close to the lion behind the bars, and we want to look in that lion's face, and we want to see it growl, and we want to see the saliva roll down its face. We even want to reach our hand in and kind of smack it in the nose and pull our hand back, but we sure don't want to get our hand bit off. And these stories in television allow us to get very close to the lion's face. It allows us to kind of vicariously involve ourselves in this story. And for your listeners, who I know follow true crime stories, that's not a negative.
No.
It's we all want to see justice take place. It's all these spins and curves and lies that we apparently have to go through in a story like this, and that television spoon feeds us every night to keep our interest and to keep the ratings up, when it still, I think, it boils down to mother didn't want the child, probably chloroformed the child, accidental death, lied about everything from that point on. And the interesting thing is, you know, most of us know that if you want to keep a secret, you either do it yourself and you tell nobody else, or if you involve one other person, you make sure that there's no way they can talk.
Absolutely.
And that's how you keep a secret.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've investigated a lot of crimes where I knew who did it. There's no doubt in my mind, prove it. You
yeah.
know, that was always my find the physical evidence, get a confession, be able to prove it. And in this particular case, it seems that law enforcement is building up a very strong circumstantial case with a lot of physical evidence. But to this point, the district attorney hasn't felt the ability to either go forward and seek an indictment, or the honest reality is they don't have to be in a hurry.
No.
That child is probably dead. They're going to get one shot at Casey, the mother, as far as what her involvement may have been. So you take your time and you build the best case you can, and you don't let the media, like in the case of JonBenet Ramsey, where between the media and the district attorney's office, they wind up bringing John Mark Carr back from Thailand,
whose yeah.
only crime is probably being a little stupid and, you know, whatever illicit contact he had with children, not to include JonBenet Ramsey. So I think law enforcement in this case, the Orange County Sheriff's Office, is building one brick at a time, a wall that hopefully Casey, should she be responsible for her child's potential demise, is not going to be climb over, crawl under or go through.
Yeah, and there's the clock starts as soon as they file the charge, and they want to make sure all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. But what about, it's my term, tactic, of releasing, you know, I think it's 1,000-plus pages of, some people are calling it evidence. I don't necessarily call it that. It's nice to know stuff.
Yeah, I mean, evidence is saying that the decomposition in the car has DNA that has been directly identified as Kaylee Anthony's DNA.
That's right.
Therefore, the decomposed tissue, evidence of blood, hair, fiber, everything else, it's irrefutable. The number one, that child was in the trunk. Number two, when she was in a trunk, she was dead. And then, Dana, if I'm the defense counsel, I'm going to say, well, the car broke down and the mother abandoned the car, and the car sat in the parking lot for weeks before it was finally towed away. Maybe it was days, maybe it was weeks, who knows?
Yep.
But somebody else could have had access to that car. I mean, you still have to prove that if you think Casey did it, that she put that child in it again. So, you know, this is not like television where you've got a one-hour show, you've got 47 minutes of actual film and 13 minutes of commercials, and you have to solve a case in that time. You know, law enforcement in this particular case, thank God, is taking their time. There's not a rush to judgment, although I think, you know, most people who have looked at this case have probably in their mind indicted somebody, many times Casey, but that's the whole premise of our criminal justice system. Prove it. You know, don't tell me what you think. Don't tell me what you believe. Don't tell me what you surmise. Tell me what you can prove. And as you suggest, hundreds of pages have been released, but these are interviews.
Yeah.
These are a lot of stuff that came up, but I have yet to hear of something that links positively, scientifically. I've yet to hear something that absolutely, number one, says Kaylee Anthony is dead, and number two, says that her mother, Casey, or anybody else, is the person responsible for that death. Until you can show those two things, I think law enforcement still got investigation to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done, that's for sure. And, of course, we'll be covering it here. Clint, thank you as always, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Take care, buddy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Dr. Clint Van Zandt, retired FBI agent, author, and you can find his column on MSNBC.com and now at Newsvine.com. Got a special message from one of our monkeys, Sue, to her daughter in Kuwait. Mom loves you. How's that? And her name's Christy. So Christy in Kuwait, Sue the monkey, mom loves you. And that's from the bottom of her heart and ours here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be back in a minute with the story of Michael Tapley. Michael Tapley is missing, and it's a case that cries out for justice, and it's not being served yet. We'll be back in a minute here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. Not every case of the missing gets the coverage and gets the response that it should. And I'm not talking just the media. I'm talking from law enforcement, from investigators. You know, there are just tons and tons and tons of missing people out there, and it's so sad. But then you hear stories where, and I know we've talked to the girls from Justice Interrupted, and I'm going to steal their catchphrase here for a second, where justice is interrupted. And in this case, for Michael Tapley, justice has been interrupted. He is missing. His sister, Kim Palmer, is here with us tonight to talk about his story. Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Tell us about Michael, when he went missing, and then we'll get into the meat and potatoes of the story, so to speak.
Okay, my brother went missing on February 15th when he left work as a school bus driver in Snowflake, Arizona. And the only person reportedly to have ever seen him again was his wife.
And that was how long after that?
He went home.
That she says, I should say.
She says the last time she saw him was February 25th.
All right. And he had a job as a school bus driver.
Yes.
Did he tell anyone at work. You know, a school bus driver, that's a tough job. I've always wondered if I'd be able to do that, and I don't think I could. You know, you're driving around with a bunch of kids, and it's a huge responsibility, but I'm sure your brother had friends and talked to people. Did he say anything to his coworkers or his, you know, friends, what he was going to do, that he was going fishing, that he was going hunting, whatever?
His coworkers reported that he stated he was going to hang around the house over the long President's Day weekend, the three-day weekend they had coming up, and that he was going to work around the house and relax.
Okay. And the wife says?
She said he was due back to work on February 19th, which was a Tuesday. She said he woke up that morning, had a headache, decided not to go to work. And my brother had never called in sick to this job. He'd worked over 13 months,
mm-hmm.
never missed a day. She reports that he just did not go into work that day. The next day, Wednesday the 20th, said that he woke up and said, "We're going to Missouri today. Pack up your things. We're going to go see your mother."
Okay.
So, according to her, they packed up in the truck that they had only one vehicle, and they loaded up the dog and they traveled to Missouri. She reports that they, her mother was in the hospital at the time. They parked in front of her mother's house, and somewhere along the lines, they got a van from her brother. And according to her, they stayed in this van for 3 days and three nights in front of her mother's house. And then my brother decided he wanted to go to a casino in Kansas City. She took him to a casino and dropped him off and never saw him again.
I just want to share with my audience that if you have any information into the disappearance of Michael Tapley, for you to call the Navajo County Sheriff's Office at 928-532-6060. That's the Navajo County Sheriff's Office at 928-532-6060. There's also a website set up at http://sites.google.com/site/justiceformichael, or any email information can be sent to justiceformichael@gmail.com. Okay, there's all sorts of different things that I'm hoping law enforcement have done, including checking, you know, bank card transactions, cell phone usage and pings, surveillance tapes at this casino, if that actually happened, repair work to vehicles, things like that. Kim, has any of that been done? If so, what did they tell you?
Yes, they have done those types of checks. The surveillance video at the casino and also the ID check came up negative. They checked. There are four casinos in that area. The one she specifically states that she dropped him off at was negative for surveillance and ID, and the other three were negative for ID. Neither one of them walked into that casino or any casino in that area on or around that day. My brother's cell phone and bank account were not used after February 15th.
Okay, I know, and please do not take offense by what I'm saying, but I see, if I was investigating this matter, the direction I would be pointing now, the wife. She has spoken to police. Has she given any sort of statement, taken any sort of polygraph or lie detector test? There's something funny, something fishy here. It just doesn't smell right.
She did take a polygraph test and passed it.
Mm-hmm.
Her statement that she, as I said, they spent the weekend together, and Michael did not call into work on that Tuesday and did not return his boss's many phone calls by his own choice, and that he decided to just go on this trip And there were stops along the way. She saw her brother and her mother both live in the same neighborhood. While they were there, the vehicle that they went in, their only vehicle that they owned, was given away. No money changed hands, was given away to a co-worker of her brother's. They work in a tire and auto shop, and told police that my brother said that they had to get rid of the vehicle because they owed money on it, which was not true. Or had a clear title to his truck. And then another time she told the police that the truck was not mechanically sound to make it home and that they would need to get something else.
Are you still able to hear me? I'm hearing some clicking on the phone.
Yes.
Okay.
I can.
Now, what are investigators telling you? I'm reading into the story somewhat that, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you're not totally thrilled with the investigation and how it's been going. Am I right or wrong?
You are right.
Tell me why.
I believe that there are many, many leads that are not being followed up on. Any leads that are questioned, the answer that we get from the sheriff's department is that her story can neither be proven nor disproven, and without a body, they cannot bring her in for further questioning, and she did pass a polygraph test.
Now, passing a polygraph test, it depends the questions you're asked, okay? Is if the questions were in regards to the statement that she's already given, but there's no accusatory type questions. It depends. Again, I'm not totally familiar with what they've said or what's been done, and I won't question that. And the whole thing about polygraphs and admissibility is another thing. But what concerns me and has me riled up here is the sheriff's department, the law enforcement. What do you want them to do?
I want them to question her further. She is the last person that saw my brother, and I believe that she knows where he is. I believe that her story is inconsistent. How could two people live in a van in front of a house where all the houses are very close together without any one person ever seeing my brother? Many people saw her. There were stops along the route. There was a stop at a auto repair shop where a new fuel filter was put on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
The repairman saw her. He saw the dog. He did not see my brother. In fact, he said that the cab of the truck was so full of clothing and other items that he could not even sit behind the steering wheel. He had to push the items aside. And he claims that there was no way another person could fit into the cab of that truck.
Has the vehicle been in law enforcement's hands as far as searching it, doing a forensic check on it?
It was impounded in Missouri, and it was blacklighted on the inside, and that is all the processing that was done on the truck. The truck also, the tires and the bumpers were disposed of. And those were not attempted to be tracked down. They did not find them or attempt to find them. And the outside of the truck, the undercarriage of the truck, was not processed.
Where is the vehicle now?
The vehicle was okayed to be released.
Oh, geez.
Back to the person that it was given to back in February.
Now, the department, the police department that has jurisdiction over this case is the Navajo County Sheriff's Office?
Yes.
Who is above them? The state police?
not in Arizona. The state police is not above them and cannot step in and take over the case. They did call and offer resources, manpower, help, and were refused.
Have you spoken to other media besides myself and a few others? Because this is a case that needs to be heard.
Yes, I have been trying to get some of the local news media to run the story. We did have an initial story on the television when they first were missing, and we haven't had any follow-ups. There was a the big Arizona newspaper, for some reason, won't carry the story. I have a smaller newspaper in Snowflake that has printed a few articles. Not all the details are correct. They haven't taken much care in making sure that everything that they have printed was factual. Dates are incorrect. His age is incorrect. Things like that. And they don't print anything negative about the investigation itself.
You know your brother better than anyone, and I'm speculating here somewhat, but I've covered cases in the past before where, and one just not long ago with a college student who was missing for the longest time but who was found on another college campus. It was a miracle for the mother. There was some mental health issues and that caused this to happen, but again, you know Michael better than anyone. Is this something that there may be a possibility where he just had enough and walked away, or is he that kind of person?
Absolutely not. He would. He was always very careful to keep in contact with particularly my parents and his children. And he was always very concerned about my mother worrying about him. Even though he was a 50-year-old man, he was worried about his mother worrying about him. And he loved his family. He was had a dog for 10 years. He loved her. He would never leave anywhere without her. And his property, it wasn't much. It was 40 acres in Snowflake, but he built a cabin on it, and he planted fruit trees, and he had a big greenhouse that he had just purchased and hadn't had time to put up. He loved gardening, and he was talking about running cattle on his land. He was very excited about all of that, and he would not have walked away from that, not without letting us know where he was.
Kim Palmer's here, and we're talking about her missing brother, Michael Tapley. And again, if you have any information about the disappearance or the whereabouts of Michael Tapley, please call the Navajo County Sheriff's Office at area code 928-532-6060, or email that information to justiceformichael@gmail.com, or there's a website, https://sites.google.com/site/justiceformichael. When you go through something like this as a family, and I covered tons and tons of these cases, unfortunately, but they keep happening. It's one thing to be a family and be missing a loved one, but it's another one not to have confidence in the investigation that's being done into that missing loved one. Have you spoken to, you know, your politician in your area, your congressman, your senator, whoever?
Many times I've tried to contact these people and am either sent a notice saying that they cannot help me, or my pleas are completely ignored. I believe I've spoken to, or I have written letters to or called the office of everybody that I thought could possibly help me, and am constantly referred back to either the FBI or the Navajo County Sheriff's Department. And the only thing that I'm told is to make pleas to the media to change the people that have the elected officials that are making the decisions. in that county. This is all my family has, is to try and convince the voters that the person that they voted in is not qualified to do the job.
And have you thought about hiring an attorney, getting a victim's rights advocate to help you with the sheriff, whoever?
We have checked into that, and unfortunately my family just cannot afford the fees that they charge.
Sure.
to hire someone.
One of the other websites that's covering this is www.juror13.com, and then just click through the links and you'll find the story on Michael Tapley. Of course, here at Scared Monkeys, we'll cover the story too. If there was a message, Kim Palmer, that you would like to give out right now, and if it's to his wife, to the sheriff, to whoever, I'm going to give you the next 2 minutes to do that on air here. You talk, you take over the show, and you tell whoever you want to tell what you would like about this case, about how you want to see your brother.
I want to find my brother. And I think that the people that are hired and elected to do so are not doing their jobs. We, as the public, need to stand up and we need to say that is not right. And these people that are being paid with tax dollars and hired and elected to serve and protect are allowed to play God, and they're allowed to decide whom they look for and in what way. They have complete control over missing persons cases, and they are allowed to make all the decisions as to if they look, if they send in DNA evidence, if they follow up on leads. And there's somebody out there that knows the answer. They know where my brother is, and they need to be pursued.
Well said. Again, Michael Tapley is missing. If you have any information on his whereabouts, call the Navajo County Sheriff's Department at 928-532-6060. Thank you, Kim, and I'll stay in touch, and we can do another story soon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye. You know, you hate to see or hear stories like this. It's just... Well, it's so sad because, you know, having a missing loved one is difficult enough. But when you have no faith in the investigation that's being done to try and find them or to find out why they went missing, that's another one. And we'll do what we can here on Scared Monkeys Radio to try and help. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're back. Many of you have been asking, many of you have been writing, many of you have been emailing. You know, when you've had Leonard Padilla on the program, bounty hunter Leonard Padilla, involved in the Casey Anthony case and the disappearance of Kaylee Anthony, he said that there would be bombshell DNA evidence, and we want to know what that is. Well, you know what? Instead of sitting here talking about it, I thought, why not give Leonard a call and see what he has to say. Hi, Leonard.
How you doing?
I'm great. Nice to have you back on the program. Is there a bit of a mix-up here? What's with this bombshell DNA
evidence? Basically, what I've been waiting for the FBI lab to release is something that would be almost an automatic. In other words, their preliminary studies so far have only shown that there was hair samples from Kaylee that basically proved that she was dead because of the death band on the hair.
Right.
What I had alluded to at one time was that you have to understand that they've got other evidence, but it takes longer. Now, they've already got it. I have no doubt they've already finished their exams and everything, and they've got it ready to release. Last week, somebody was asking me about, well, what's going to be released? Well, I told them, I said, well, they've got, you know, 500 or 600 pages more information that's coming out. And the only reason I knew that is because it basically had been leaked to a young lady that works in the media in Orlando. She asked me if I knew about it, and I said, no. She says, well, it's coming out.
Okay.
And I thought it was coming out, 3 or 4 days after it actually came out. It came out the very next morning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the I do know that the Orange County Sheriff's Office has been spending a lot of time with the state prosecutor this past week, constantly at their office. It would lead me to believe that there's more releases going to be made. Now, when the final releases are made out of the FBI office, it'll have a lot of information in there. In other words, their forensic information is usually just mind-boggling, right down to what kind of a, you know, things took place in the trunk of the car and things of that nature.
So what?
I think that's why people, I've had a couple of people call me up and say, well, when's this stuff going to be released? I would expect it any day now.
So it's not only going to be a bombshell to you and to me when we hear it.
Oh yeah, no, what it does is it summarizes in very, very, you know, minute. I mean, it takes it right down to inches. You know exactly what happened and how it happened and when it happened. I mean, it'll tell you exactly when that child died.
One of the other big things that has
hours. I mean, it won't be guessing a week or a day. It'll tell you within hours.
Yeah, it'll narrow it right down for sure. One of the other things, Leonard, and I appreciate you coming on. That's come up recently. Some speculation, some rumor. Call it what you want. Is the book and movie deals we're hearing? We're hearing ABC. We're hearing the Lifetime Movie Channel. We're hearing seven-figure sums. What do you know?
The things that I'm pretty sure of, and I have no, you know, first-hand knowledge, is that there was $250,000 paid for some licensing rights on behalf of 2020 by their parent company.
For the video?
The attorney.
Yeah.
Which he will be using for the defense of his client. This is usually something that takes place quite often in cases of this magnitude. Somebody steps up and tells the attorney, hey, we've got X number of dollars, and they don't call it like a fee to appear on their program. They call it licensing fees and things of that nature.
Sure.
So if you go to 2020 and you say, did you pay $250,000 for the attorney to appear on your show? They'll say no. But if you ask them if they paid a licensing fee, then they'll say, well, you'd have to talk to our legal department.
Have you been?
That's basically that. Now, there's another figure that's being thrown around, about $2.5 million offered to Casey.
Right.
If she would come out and basically tell the truth, obviously being verified by a lie detector test as to what happened. I think eventually you're going to see the number go higher, and eventually I think she'll take the deal under certain conditions. But I think you're going to see upwards of $2.5 million.
Have you been approached by any of these media people for?
Yeah, I've talked to several of them. Even before I went back to Orlando, there was people that contacted me regarding information of, you know, would you be willing to sell some of this or sell some of that? And I told them, here's the deal. Talk to the attorney. Talk to Cindy. I personally don't have any interest in any of the money.
Right.
Out of this situation. And it was a document that the attorney didn't believe me, so I signed him a document saying that I had no interest in any of the money or any of the proceeds.
So when I use the term...
He didn't think that that's the reason I was there.
When I use the term follow the money trail, that's got nothing to do with you.
No, I really don't, and I'll tell you why. The minute you get involved in trying to figure out how to make money off a deal like this, your whole thinking gets skewed.
Right.
It doesn't stay... It doesn't stay down the straight narrow. You start thinking, okay, maybe if I don't say something on Friday, maybe if I say it on Monday, it'll be worth more. So there
sure.
are things like this that, you know, and there's People Magazine, there's Globe, National Enquirer. They've all come around. I've referred all of them, even as of last week, I've referred them to either Cindy or the attorney, Jose.
One last question, Leonard. When I talked to you last, you were speaking with the Orange County Sheriff's investigators. Any more plans for that, or is that done?
Well, they've asked us if we'd be willing to travel to Orlando, and we have no problem with that, you know, if need be.
Okay. Well, it's interesting, as always. I appreciate your time, sir. Thank you.
Sure. You bet.
Okay,
you
bye-bye. That's Leonard Padilla. Orange County Sheriff's Department officers are going to be talking with him again soon, and I wanted to clear up some of the questions that we all were wondering. That's it. That's the Dana Presser Show for tonight, and I appreciate all my guests. I appreciate all you listening, and especially those of you in Kuwait. Remember, Mom loves you, and you phone your mom and tell her that you love her, too. My name is Dana Pretzer. That's it for tonight. Thank you very much. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.